Conspicuous gallantry for heroism above and beyond the call of duty. This is the highest tribute our nation can pay its heroes. This is the greatest distinction that may come to any American. The Congressional Medal of Honor, CMH.
This is a free man walking, firm and straight, and the steps have the confidence and pride of America. This is the same man 3 years later. Can you hear the bitterness and shame in the walk now? Can you see the staring eyes, the gaunt hollows in the cheeks, and the bulging veins on his wrist? Can you make out the triumph in the eyes that watched the American drag himself about the prison camp in Manchuria? You should. Yes, the Japs have conquered a body, but that's all. This man's heart and brain pound away with a single rhythmic thought over and over again.
I will be patient, but I'm waiting. I'm waiting for them to come. It was a promise. They'll keep it. They'll come.
This is Jack Costello bringing you another in the National Broadcasting Company's series honoring the more than 200 Americans who have won the Congressional Medal of Honor in this war. These are the men, privates and generals, ordinary seamen and gold-braided admirals, whose fellows in arms have nominated them for the highest distinction that may come to any American. These are the men of a select company, the men of the CMH. In this series, we suggest that we remember these, our greatest heroes, and honor them as we do our scholars and professional men by writing after their names forever in the days of peace their degree of heroism, CMH. A slate can be rubbed clean, swish, and it's done. But did you ever try the impossible job of wiping memories from a mind, from a pulsing mass of cells and nerve endings that have felt and stored the impression of love and home, of humiliation and shame, of blinding pain and burning hate? Don't try it. It can't be done. Jonathan M. Wainwright, in The Living of Bataan and Corregidor, would tell it to you. Not many minutes from now, the hero of tonight's story will speak to you in person. But first, in the words of a man who knew him well, Sergeant Hubert Carroll, his orderly, as played by Jackson Beck, let's hear the story. The story of General Jonathan M. Wainwright, CMH.
I'm in a C-54 transport. It's a beautiful airplane. The sound of those motors out there is soft and homey. Kind of rocks you to sleep. I've never been in one of these planes before. In those 3 years and 3 months in the Jap camp at Siam, Manchuria, we never saw anything but Jap faces, Jap planes, and Jap cars. Just Japs. I was with him in the camp as his orderly. My name is Hubert Carroll, Sergeant Hubert Carroll of Paris, Texas. And I'm coming home with Skinny. We have our safety belts tightened. And there's a lot of slack in them. You get that way when you don't eat regular. It's September 10th, and the National Airport at Washington, D.C. is pushing up fast to meet us. General's going down the gangway. I'm right behind. He's looking for someone. A face he's thought of for more than 3 years. And she's there, waiting. For a second, his eyes drink deeply of the lady standing there. Then she's in his arms.
Hello, darling. Hello, darling.
Kitty.
You're home, darling.
Kitty. Kitty. Will you take my arm, dear?
At last, the tears. It's good to see him cry. I've waited to see it. But he was dry-eyed on April 9th, 1942. But Tan was a bog of sluggish blood trickling down in Manila Bay. It's over. The Japs are standing on Bataan and yelling a loud bonsai. But as yet, there are no bonsais on the rock, Corregidor. Just a little less than a month later, May 6, 1942, Private Irving Strobing of Brooklyn, New York, pounds out a message from Corregidor. And his fingernails have no moons, for his body has known no food.
They're not near yet. We're waiting for God only knows what. How about a chocolate sundae? Lots of heavy fighting going on. We may have to give up before noon. We don't know yet. They have been shelling us faster than you can count. I feel sick at my stomach. I am really low down.
He's sitting in that small tent over there. Watched the lines in his face grow sharper, like furrows in a field. His hair is close-cropped and gray. His body weak from beriberi. And the cane leaning against the desk helps his aching right leg when he walks. There are two pictures in ragged frames on the desk. One of his wife, the other of himself on a polo pony. Now there's nothing left but memories. I can see all this as I enter the tent. Sir?
Come in, son.
Thank you, sir.
You look a little tired, son.
You too, if I may say so, sir. You don't...
Yes, I know. It's taken me the last few nights to prepare for the moving. Always dislike breaking a lease. How are the men taking it?
So they're crying. I've never seen men cry before.
Well, we're all children. We grow beards, put on long pants. But underneath it all, I guess we're still in knee breeches. I've tried to cry, but nothing happens.
Sir?
Yes?
I came in to ask you about food. It's been 2 days since you've eaten. Men know you've been giving your share to them, but now they say they won't.
You make me sound like a hero, son. I'm not.
I wish you could forget, sir.
That Jack was my horse? No. Besides, look at me. Skinny. Skinny Wainwright. That's what the boys call me. Well, I am. And a little horse meat isn't going to make me any difference. Thanks, anyway, son.
Yes, Jack, the general's pony, was the menu today. I guess I shouldn't have asked him because Skinny Wainwright was always that way. You hear that? It's one of his favorite songs. It means open fields with the wind cool against your face. A galloping horse. The sweet smell of a campfire on the plain. He had many of those days back when he was a major stationed at Fort Riley, Kansas.
You'll never make the Metropolitan with your baritone.
Well, maybe not, sir. But there isn't an opera singer with a mount like Jack. I guess that makes us even.
Hey, Wainwright, what are you going to do if they assign you to a tank?
Hold the reins, I suppose?
Won't be easy for you.
Yeah, it's just as difficult for any cavalryman.
I don't think so. You're more bow-legged than anyone I've ever seen. How are you going to ride a tank with legs like that?
Well, I guess I'll just put a bit in her motor, saddle on the turret, slap her flanks, and let her buck.
Skinny Wainwright, old Skinny it is now, got around a lot in the last war. In 1918, he was assigned to the general staff of the 3rd Army in the Rhineland. In September 1940, war was again raging in Europe. But General Wainwright, with his family, was headed for the Philippines. And soon the signs were there for all to see. Skinny Wainwright wasn't going to miss his war. And for the first time in 30 years, Adele Wainwright left her husband on foreign soil at his request and went home. Old Skinny was alone. And back where he really began his military career. 3 years out of West Point in 1906, Lieutenant Wainwright, U.S. Cavalry, was in the middle of another Moro rebellion.
No, this is suicide, Skinny. Why'd ever let you talk me into coming out into the bush without the squadron?
And if we had a squadron, we'd never have got to this camp.
Your head'll be on the ground before I can say one word. I'll be sensible, Skinny. Let's go back and bring up.
No. Well, you wait right here. And those are our orders. I'll be back with company.
The crazy cowboy.
This is it. Chief! Chief! Where is Sorto?
Me, Sorto.
Lieutenant Wainwright at your service.
Why you come?
I think we ought to have talk.
You brave man. Me have bolo. Wait.
Huh? What are you pointing at?
You come with pistol. Not so brave.
Pistol? Oh, yes, yes. Well, look, I'll take it off. There. Now do we have our talk?
Sorto, fight, no talk.
Well, look, Sorto, I know you haven't any more ammunition. You can't fight us with your bolos. Your whole tribe will be wiped out.
Money huts empty.
They can be filled.
Sorto, talk to American men who look like bamboo tree.
You know, every spring I used to wait anxiously for the robins to dot the green grass, and they never failed to come. Well, there's a homeward loyalty in humans, too, as General Jonathan Wainwright discovered 35 years later in 1942 while he was still on Bataan.
Who are those Filipinos?
Oh, they're from Hello, sir. Just arrived. I didn't want to disturb you.
Hello? How did they get here?
Their leader apologized. Said they heard about the war several weeks ago and that they sailed as fast as they could. He wants to see you.
Me?
I'll refer them to Major Dooley. He can...
Just a moment. Hello, eh?
Yes, sir.
Bring him over.
Yes, sir.
You are older, American, but you still look like bamboo tree.
Bamboo? Sorto, you old devil.
I am older, but my language is better, I think.
Much. But you've changed in other ways. Where's the bolo?
Sorto has learned that bullets can hurt from far away. That is why we have come. As you said, my huts are now filled. My warriors stand with you. They know how to use guns. This time, we not talk, we fight together.
You're right. This is no time for big talk. Thank you, Sorto.
Maybe you think I like him just because I was his orderly. Because it's the thing you expect me to say. Okay, listen to Joe then.
I'm just a Joe. There are millions like me, but only a few of us were lucky enough to work under Skinny Wainwright. And if you think this is a lot of hoopla, go ahead and turn off your set. Go on. One thing that Skinny knew when he was up at that prison camp was that there were guys like me coming back for him someday. Why? Not because he wore some stars on his collar, but because Skinny was like a father to us on Bataan and the Rock. He could have sat in his tent all day and that would have been all right with us. But he didn't. I met him in a queer kind of way. It was in one of those mud donuts you call a foxhole. A fox has more sense than to live in a foxhole. Well, things were pretty raw. Huh? Are you nuts standing up there like a statue? Get into a hole, you jerk!
You seem to have the only one within walking distance.
Oh, heck no, not in here. There ain't room. Skinny Wainwright himself couldn't get in here.
Well, maybe he could. Let's try anyway.
Oh.
There.
Sure. All right, so you're in. Now what? This ain't no boarding house.
Don't worry. I brought my own rifle along.
Well, now, ain't that nice? And who asked you for help?
I thought there were enough Japs to go around.
Yeah? Oh, move over a little. Cripes, you got long legs.
Oh, sorry.
This was a swell hole until you... Cripes. Three stars. Skinny, I mean, general, sir. Oh, brother.
Forget it, son.
Yes, sir. General.
Yes?
Sir, you're not as thin as I thought. Could you get your shoulder blade out of my back so I can aim this rifle,
oh,
sir?
Sorry. Comfortable now?
Yes, sir, just like home.
How long have you been in this mud pie, son?
About 5 hours, sir.
Tired?
Oh, kind of.
Why don't you snooze a while? You'd feel better.
Oh, I...
Go ahead. Orders. You've got a replacement. Go to sleep.
But you can't... Thank you, sir.
Good night, son.
Good night, sir.
Now, you might think it was a break for me to be a general's orderly. His orderly. Well, it was. But there wasn't one guy who was jealous. It's hard to be jealous of a guy who has to watch a man he loves grow old quickly. To watch him drag himself around on a cane. To shiver with him when he shakes in a malaria attack. It wasn't easy. I'd have rather been two other guys. It was exactly 1 week before the end he knew was coming. It was April 29th, 1942. It was the day of three letters. Yep, three letters.
Come in, son.
Thank you, sir.
You have a letter. Something personal?
No, sir. One of the men, Joe Krykowski of Pittsburgh, he asked me to mail it for him.
He's got a good sense of humor.
Joe's been carrying this letter around for months. He wrote it before they came. For some reason, he thought about it this morning. Kind of... Well, I said I'd do my best, sir.
The letter will get to Pittsburgh.
How, sir?
Well, I've ordered Colonel Clear to Australia. He's leaving tonight. I've got a letter to my wife here I want him to take along, too. Oh, has this letter been censored?
Not yet, sir. I was going to give it to Major Dooley.
May I?
You are, sir. Well, now I'd better move along. They're expecting me at the Melinda Tunnel.
Let's see what Joe Krykowski has to say. Well, I'm here, Marie. I'm glad. It's a beautiful place. But it's the kind of beauty that is both pleasant and dangerous. Fort Mills is located on an island called Corregidor. It's a lovely place filled with a floral display that would knock your eyes out. Palm trees, coconut trees, thousands of vari-colored flowers, and big bushes of gardenias. The air is just filled with the scent of a million gardenias. Orchids bloom everywhere, and a native flower that has the most pleasant perfume. I wish you could see them, Marie. I know that you would love them all as I do. Give my love to all and tell my friends that I'm happy and doing better than even they expected me to do. Love, Joe. I didn't hear you come in, Doctor.
I beg your pardon, sir, but I want to report that the tunnels are all filled. There's no place left to bury the dead.
That was the nearest he ever came to crying. With the smell of jungle flowers and a letter to Pittsburgh on one side, and the stinking smell of dead bodies piled in long rows on the other. In between the letters came the meeting.
Gentlemen, you know the situation. They need time. Time for a real defense to be organized. Corregidor is the cork and Jap bottle. While it holds, they're stopped.
Sir, I've always held that discretion is the better part of
battle. Absolutely right, Doctor. But discretion at your leisure. Not when your country's throat is lying on the block and a Jap sword is ready to cut it. We can be discreet. And we will be. But only when the last shell has been fired.
Then you won't leave on the submarine tonight?
I've been with my men from the start. We've been through so much together that my conscience will not let me leave. I'm staying.
I was alone with him when he read the second letter, but he never saw me.
I am not a bit nervous about the situation. I've been to war before, Kitty. But at the same time, I'm fully conscious of the tremendous responsibility I'm carrying. I've been shot at before now. But that is simple compared to the awful responsibility of preventing a hostile landing in force. But I'll do my best. And hope I will not fail.
Well,
sir. From General Yamashita.
Here it is, sir.
Fancy, too. All dressed up with a red ribbon. A personal note from the Tiger of Malaya. Here, son, you take it.
Well, aren't you going to read it, sir?
No, Saunders. We can't surrender just yet.
Sir, I have the daily report.
Read it.
Chief Surgeon reports the last quinine administered yesterday, sir. Morphine dosage reduced below required minimum. Food rations will expire within 3 days. The last reserve of ammunition has been issued to the troops. With controlled firing, it should be enough for a week at the most. Shells are hitting James...
Now, read that again.
Shells are hitting...
No. About our ammo supply.
With controlled firing, it should be enough for a week at...
7 days, eh? Give this message to the radio man. Tell Washington I have received a request from General Yamashita for the surrender of Corregidor and all forces in the islands. Tell them that the offer is very inviting, but tell them I am ignoring it. Now I'd like to go back to my tent.
The sands were running out for us, and he knew it. But we were giving what only we could give. Time. Most of the troops were so weak they couldn't leave their gun positions. 3 miles away across the bay, the Jap guns screamed at us day and night. You know, there was a song, popular from Bataan. We sang it without bitterness. We never changed the lyrics. They never bored us.
We're the orphans of Bataan. No mama, no papa, no Uncle Sam. We swear and we fight, and we're left alone at night. The Japs, they dance and yell as we send them all to hell. We're the orphans of Bataan. No mama, no papa, no
in the wounded every minute. It's a horrible sight. We will be waiting for you guys to help. Corregidor used to be a nice place. It's haunted now. Everyone is bawling like a baby. I am vomiting. I know now how a mouse feels caught in a trap. Waiting for guys to come along. General Wainwright is the right guy.
It's all right, son. It's all right. We can't fight with empty guns. But we did somehow, didn't we? Now, please ask him to run up the white flag. The cork is out.
And 3 months in a Jap prison camp. But we weren't forgotten. And Skinny Wainwright was remembered. A little while ago, he was standing on board the deck of the Missouri. General MacArthur was signing the Jap surrender papers. I watched Skinny carefully. There should have been tears just then. But no. It's not right for a man to get all stuffed up with tears and hold them back. I saw MacArthur turn and say,
"We've done it, Skinny. It's our day."
"Thank you."
"I wish you'd keep this pen."
"Yeah.
You wrote the piece, too."
"I'll keep it always."
He stood there with his arm around General MacArthur. But I could see that he was far away. That he was happy. But that he was still patient. Waiting. Still waiting. Dreaming of his homecoming.
Hello, darling. Hello, darling.
Kitty.
You're home, darling.
Kitty. did it. Will you take my arm, dear?
Well, the tears finally came. I was glad to see him cry. Now that you know, that's not a funny thing to say, is it?
Those, ladies and gentlemen, are some of the facts, some of the anecdotes that we thought you'd like to know about General Jonathan M. Wainwright. Right now, the hero of Corregidor is getting a well-earned rest down in West Virginia. With you, he has been listening to this program, and it is now my privilege to call upon him to say a few words himself. Ladies and gentlemen, from White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, we bring you General Jonathan M. Wainwright, C.M.H.
Even though some time has elapsed since my return to my native land, I still have difficulty in finding adequate words with which to express my gratitude to my fellow countrymen for the great honors they have given me. Honors that included the highest and proudest award that any soldier may attain. But I am fully conscious that when the President of the United States placed the Congressional Medal of Honor around my neck, symbolically, he placed it also around the neck of every man and woman of my last command. For without the courage and endurance and patriotism of those thousands of Americans and Filipinos, the proud story of Bataan and Corregidor could not have taken its place in the saga of human heroism. As long as I live, I shall never forget them. Those who fought and died in the Philippines, and those who afterwards went on to suffering and torture in Japanese prison camps. As long as I live, it shall never be my fortune to meet finer men and women. And in their name, I make one request of the American people. It is this: never again be indifferent to danger. Never let us be caught with our guard down. Why, I ask you, please, be faithful to the trust we now repose in you. Make sure for all time that America, our nation, is never again caught unprepared. Remember the lesson of Bataan. Remember the lesson of Corregidor. Keep your guard up, America.
Thank you, General Wainwright. Tonight's script of CMH was written by Saul Panitz. Music was composed by Morris Pomorski and conducted by Milton Catons. In the story, General Wainwright was played by Bill Adams, Sergeant Carroll by Jackson Beck. The entire production was under the direction of Joseph Mansfield. Next week, we bring you the story of a red-headed Irishman from Bronx County, New York. The story of Lieutenant Charles Shoot'em Shea, CMH. This is the National Broadcasting Company.